Check, check.
Yeah, there we go. I got a new mic for myself for Hanukkah.
Oh, nice.
It's just the classic podcaster's Yeti. It's like the mute button when it's on, like when the button is glowing, that means you're not muted. And when it's blinking, you are muted.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, interesting strategy.
It's an interesting design strategy, kind of like the COVID test, where the C is control and the T is that's COVID.
Right, right, right. Yeah, exactly.
So now I have figured out how my mic works, but every time I turn it on, I start recording and I'm like, oh shit, it's broken.
You have like a panic situation.
Yeah, I have like 2 seconds where I lose my breath, not because of COVID, which in fact I have.
Ugh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Are you doing okay?
Yeah,
you, sound a little, but yeah.
It's a little froggy, but now it's better.
Okay.
And I was just glad that this week's game was on network, so I didn't have to become patient zero just so I could watch the game at a bar.
Yeah, right. That's right. My brother-in-law just tested positive today, so that, like, and he was with my sister, and he were with our parents and his parents over the weekend for like a holiday dinner. So that's really great. So Christmas is in doubt at the moment, at least with my parents.
That sucks. I know that this podcast has niche appeal, so I don't know how familiar you are with the convention of our music, which is to say we do not license any music. As an intellectual property guy, I think you will respect that. So we don't license music. What we do instead is we use public domain and just play When the Saints Come Marching In on mouth horns. And so usually I have a duetist for this. Unfortunately, Ron is not here. You are free to play with me, but whether or not you do, I am going to play us in, and then we'll get started. All good?
Okay. Yep.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 16 after week 15 of the NFL season. Saints beat the Giants 24-6. That's lovely. Unfortunately, Ron is stuck at work in an undisclosed location, so I'm flying solo tonight, but for my excellent guest, a friend of mine who is a fellow podcaster, one of the co-hosts of What a Time to Be Alive. Everyone welcome Patty Moe. Patrick Monahan, how are you doing, Patty?
I'm doing good. That phrase fellow podcaster is a that's one of those what's going on with my life, you know.
Well, it could be worse. I could be saying fellow lawyer. I could be saying fellow comedian with dubious credits.
Yes, wow, we're really checking all the same boxes here. It's interesting.
But you do have a much better beard than I am capable of. We talked about that before.
We did.
You have a nice, clean, well-groomed beard. And if I let mine grow out, I not only have marital issues, but the appearance of mange.
I mean, mine, you know, it gets to a point when it's like, all right, I got to do something here. We're getting close. I'm due for a cleanup before the holidays, I think, just for photo purposes.
Sure. You know, no, it looks very like clean, them. Though.
Thank you.
In an ideal world where my wife did not loathe the idea of me having a beard, it really could do some work on my expanding chins issue. Not that it ever really covers anything up, but at the very least, it becomes more ambiguous.
I mean, if you There's a beard level of growth that you can like fool yourself, and you're like, oh, let's see how it looks without it. You know, it's probably better now. And then you're like, oh no,
right?
Yeah, and grow back as fast as you can. So yeah, I've learned that lesson enough times now.
I don't really have a beard solution, because most of the time I'm looking at myself on Zoom, and while a camera from below is very chin heavy, a camera from above has the unfortunate effect of cutting me off just at the point where it looks like I very clearly am shaped like Grimace. It's before it kind of levels out, so it just looks like I'm triangle all the way. So either way, you just are glad that you locked someone down who took a binding vow.
That's right. They said they spoke the words, you know, they said, yeah, it's that they said the oath. That's important. I got this. It's like a video game camera or something. I don't know. It was an Eli recommendation. It's like a, you know, the company's called like Razer or something like that. So, but it's got like a ring light on it. It was not that expensive. So it's like good for this kind of stuff. It's a wider angle, which is nice, because my concern was always taking up too much of the frame, where like if you're like even if it's just your arms, or you know, the way you're sitting, but if you are touching both ends of the frame, you then look like you are like, it looks like that screenshot from The Whale,
right? Yeah, you could, that person could be going on forever. like the queen's bodyguard or close friend or whoever that was.
Oh yes.
You know, when she's walking down like all shriveled and old, and he is looming behind her like the captain from Deadwood.
I believe he was the original absolute unit.
Yes.
I
think, right? Is at that correct? At the very least, he became the archetype.
Yeah, he was unit zero. Yeah, so that's now that we got that out of our system.
Yeah,
collectively.
Yeah,
we know we have the same concerns.
We do, but no. We don't have the same concerns. Your concern is, how do I get myself standing next to Charles Starr in this photo?
That's fair.
So how is the podcast? All good news. Everyone's still talking to each other.
Yeah, well, yeah. for 1 hour and 24 minutes every we're. No, it genuinely is. You know, there. I think there are probably days for each of us, you know, or weeks when it's like you're not really. But I mean, once it gets going, you know, it's still fun. So you know, yeah. And then when we go in person, which is once a month ish, you know, those are, I think, probably, you know, noticeably a little bit peppier, because it's, you know, you feed off each other better when you're in the same room, I think, than when you're on Zoom. But I mean, you know, we all live in different boroughs, basically, or not exactly, but I mean, you know, it's like a 45 minute, you know, trip each way for right, all of us to get to the studio space. So like, you know, that takes a huge chunk out of your day, and you know, so it's just not, it's hard to motivate.
And so where do you do the live show?
The last couple live shows we did were at the Gutter in Williamsburg, where everyone's recording their specials now.
Uh-huh.
Before that, we were at Caveat, which I know you were familiar with.
Yeah.
But yeah, Gutter is maybe a little bit more our speed, I think. You know, Caveat's kind of a
little Tony,
little ritzier. Yeah. For, you know, and yeah, you get kind of the, people came out, so, you know, no complaints there, but yeah, Gutter feels like the, you know, it's become that place, I think, for a lot of type things, you know,
right.
You know, like Django special was recorded there.
Yeah. That's great. So now you are a Giants fan from the kind of in-between area where you could have gone New York or you could have gone New England, right?
I mean, I think the question would have been for me more Giants versus Jets, I think.
Oh, okay.
Just based on my family, just because nobody in my family likes any Boston teams. So right, it would have stuck out, I think, for me.
Enjoy that while it lasts.
Well, right. The... I mean, also like the Pats sucked until like 2002 or whatever, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like nobody was going out of their way to, you know, and not that the Giants were amazing or the Jets, you know, but I mean, it was, they were not pulling people from far away
right,
to root for them.
Right. Even think. Like, even if they were equally good, the Giants had,
right,
the Giants and Jets have more gravity.
Right. Yeah, in those days. Because you weren't that far off from, you know, Phil Simms, Jeff Hostetler, all that, you know, all that.
Yeah,
all that,
yeah.
You know, all those
Yeah,
days.
I mean, look, so. I'm, you know, I am the age that remembers the Patriots getting blown out in the 85 Super Bowl to, you know, letting Fridge score a touchdown. but yeah, like a lot of lean years in New England in between before they became a team that everyone rightly despises.
Yeah, hopefully a lot more to come.
Yes.
We get a fallow period for a while.
Yep, really enjoying.
It's really great that they all hate Belichick. Everyone hates Belichick now, right? I think that's awesome.
It seems like it. It seems like it, you know?
It's like, oh, wait, this guy's a huge pain in the ass. If he's not winning every game, like, oh, this guy stinks. What is going on
here? It
was
definitely a fun thing to talk about with Luke, that that you get only so much. You like your asshole tether is super long when you're racking up Lombardis.
Right.
And when all of a sudden your collection of scrappy white guys who know how to run button hooks runs out, then it's like, this fucking guy doesn't answer questions straight and he just ran over my mom in a parking lot.
Right. Yeah. You know, Al Davis had it right. Just win, baby.
That's,
you know,
right.
That's all you need.
That's right.
Helps to have like, you know, I don't know. I guess he's the best quarterback ever. I don't let it, but you know, but that certainly, you know, that helps
yeah.
helps the cause.
I choose not to acknowledge that, but it's probably indisputably true.
Yeah, I'm not. You know, look, I'm not going to be a big proponent one way or the other, but that seems, you know, it seems like he's certainly in a conversation.
Yeah, I really would have liked to have denied it as him being like some, you know, cheapo system guy. And then he beat the Saints in the playoffs on the way to a Super Bowl in Tampa Bay. And now I'm like, fuck, maybe I should stop eating strawberries.
Yeah, I gotta just drink water instead of wearing sunscreen, and all my troubles will be over.
and so, did you grow up caring about the Giants? Like,
well,
were you a football guy growing up?
I was a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I never played football because I was small, and I broke my ankle in seventh grade playing tackle football in my friend's front yard.
Uh-huh.
Then I didn't do it again. I didn't play it again. And then I broke my knee. When I got goaded into playing, not goaded, but, you know, like convinced into playing, like during the halftime at the Super Bowl, like in 10th grade, somebody like fell on and hyperextended my knee. So I broke my like tibia plateau.
Jesus.
So that was fun. So the last two times I played football, I got hurt. So I learned my lesson. But it's a little weird because it's kind of twisted around. Like my dad and my grandpa were Giants and Jets. Not really. It's weird because they weren't like, I feel like Giants and Jets at least don't hate each other the way that, like, or at least maybe it goes one way more than the other. But like, you know, Mets fans like hate the Yankees, right?
Right.
Like, Yankees fans don't really hate the Mets.
They just pity them. Yeah.
Correct. It's much more satisfying to kind of put on that affect, you know, as a Yankees fan. It's very, you know, oh, you guys, you know, that kind of thing. It's weird because my dad also loved Joe Montana because he was Notre Dame.
Right,
person, because sure. I'm Irish Catholic, and you know, like, so that's in the absence of any school to root for, you're just
and
an
if you
Notre
can't
Dame
make
fan.
It to Rome,
right? I mean, so that was like a weird, like that those Super Bowls were strange, or the, you know, because it was like, well, it's Joe Montana, but it's also the John. Like, what am I? You know, like that was sort of a. But I had plaques in my room.
Uh huh.
Those like plaques you could get where it was like the little gold that had like the roster on it. You know,
uh-huh,
like
in of the, course. In
the, and then the picture, the team photo, and yeah, like the Super Bowl champs, you know, whatever year. And I'm not sure where they even came from. I guess my dad just bought them and I just kind of inherited them over time,
right,
when I was, you know, in high school or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, that's about it. I mean, I would dip in over the years. I definitely dipped back in heavily circa like maybe the league championship games, the years when they beat the Pats, that was huge for me personally. But that was mostly just that's like a Red Sox revenge thing. You know,
that's not really about the
football itself. Although look, it's fun, you know, when you're watching, like, you know, I, cause I was going out to, you know, you go out to a bar or whatever, like, yeah, you know, playing, they're playing Ace Frehley, you know, back in the New York groove, you know, after every first down or whatever, you know, it's fun to be in a place when the team is good.
Yeah.
You know, so
the Derek Jeter years started when I was in law school. And I mean, I obviously, for understandable reasons, rooting for a poverty franchise, hate the Yankees, but my brother is a Yankee fan. You know, I kind of was a New York fan until I developed a weirdo kid's mind. And I absolutely bandwagoned those early Yankees World Series because I could watch with my brother and I don't actively dislike him. We're very close. and so bandwagoning the Yankees in those early World Series was actually a lot of fun because the city gets really fucking hype when the Yankees are good. And, you know, they don't get quite as hype when the Mets are good. They get into it, but it always, when the Mets are good, New York City feels like there's probably, like, something bad will happen, you know? Like
right, well, because that's what you're waiting
the
for.
The sea level will rise, and somehow they won't win. But with the Yankees, when they get on a roll, you're like, let's just fucking enjoy this ride, because it ends in victory.
And that's because with respect to the rest of the country, the Yankees are much more like the big bad Yankees are much more the New York attitude. You know what I mean? Until like something happens and it's like, whoa, leave us alone. Hey, you know, we're just little guys, you know, but like that kind of attitude is like, yeah, we're back, baby. You know,
right.
It's like Eric Adams said, right? You know, New York every day could be 9/11 or you could start a business or whatever that right. Like the most insane quote I've ever heard.
Right. You might step on a rat barefoot and you might kiss someone in Times Square when the war ends.
It's one or the other, baby. What a town. I was in college for like I was in high school and then 2001 was like when I started college, but when I was here for 2009. And that was like when I was like, maybe not peak psycho fan, but that was like pretty high up on the, you know, once the Red Sox won in 2004, that kind of like broke a fever, which was good because that was like, you ultimately were like living in fear of that happening, you know, like it could not have gone worse. So like the worst thing has already happened, you know, and now everybody hates the Red Sox too, because they're the same, you know, and there's no like, you know, underdog aspect. So it's kind of blah, but
yeah, it turns out that both Red Sox fans and Cubs fans were just Yankee fans in
they're waiting to be exactly temporarily embarrassed assholes.
Yes,
let's say that.
So baseball is of the sports, is that the one you follow the closest or more?
I would say and that's I think I'm of the milieu of person, you know, I think we're both of that. I know you obviously watch other sports too, but like there's the type of person you can tell is like into baseball if they're into anything, you know what I mean?
Right.
it appeals to a certain kind of person, I feel like. Yeah. And I don't mean that as like an insult, but there is kind of like a, you know, certain, I don't know, but it's much more, I like that it's not as exciting. I like that there's not, you know.
Yeah, like you can do something else. It's like very, it's great as a game that you're paying attention to, and it is also really great as a substitute for whale sounds.
And in the playoffs, you know, and that when it's in the, you know, bottom of the ninth inning, you every pitch makes you want to cut your own head off. Like, you know what I mean? Like it can also get like that, but it's like, you know, it is my favorite. I do enjoy football. I just don't, I'm not religious about it. It's just not, I mean, now, especially like I'm washed. I don't go do stuff socially, you know, during the day on the weekends. That's kind of where I'm at on it.
Yeah. That's kind of a running theme, it turns out, with my football podcast, is that all of my friends whose sports affiliations I know, I get them on the air and they're like, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't really care that much about football anymore, which is not super surprising because we knew each other from online and mutual friends, but we kind of became better friends in a group DM for a fantasy football league we were in together of Twitter weirdos. Tiny Baby, who was on earlier this season, was in it. A lot of guests this season were on it. Jeff was in it. Luke was in it. David Roth. Like, a lot of that group was in it, and it kind of fell apart when half the league was like, I don't really watch football anymore. It feels very morally compromised, and it's all fascists and concussions. And to that, I say, I'm sorry, I was paying attention to something else.
It's also like, man, I got like you're telling me I got to like change my stuff every week. I have to like pay attention. Like, you know, I that's just not, you know, I'm just going to let it ride, baby. I'll auto draft and we'll see how the chips fall.
Right.
You know, and that's no fun.
Let me think about how it's called. All right. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Do this, y'all. All right. Welcome to the Man in the Dome segment. John and me and Charles. Again, you know him, you love him. The fan favorite. The guy in the dome. He watched it in person. He was not looking at a screen or he wasn't at a bar with it on mute. He was there. He got to smell the players. He got to see the sights and hear the hits. You know him, you love him. Everybody's favorite, Skooks. Skooks, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Hey, everybody.
All right, and that's Man in the Dome, folks. We've run out of time.
It's great to be here. As
that's all we got. All right, thanks, Skooks. We'll see. Talk to you next week.
How are you doing,
Skooks? Yeah, well, feeling a lot better now. We're really in the holiday spirit at this point. We had a good time on Sunday.
Yeah, it's true. I will tell you, I am not feeling great. I did not have Ron with me. I don't want to call you my wingman. I'm your wingman.
No, I'm your wingman.
As a northern transplant psychologically, but not having my wingman there was tough. So I'm not feeling great about that. Also, I have COVID. Which is why, unless heavy editing hands go to work, it will sound like Darth Vader is in the studio. And that's not great.
There's a COVID filter that you can get. I don't know where to download that, but it's somewhere.
Right. Just go to QAnon.biz.
They got a biz? Yeah.
Yeah, they have a dot biz. There's nothing is free.
Yeah.
It definitely isn't dot edu, and it's barely dot org. And so it has been a rough week, but for the fact that I got to watch the Saints on network from the comfort of my own couch with the audio on. And so that was neat. Cause I don't get that very often. Because they were playing the Giants, so they were my local market.
So that means that you got to hear the boos coming through the television this time.
Yeah, but this game came correct pretty quickly. It wasn't as boo centric as the week before was. We were, you know, we gave up the first field goal, but other than that, the Giants really didn't spend any time across midfield. So. Mm-hmm. It was kind of fun, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but there was a little bit of that at the beginning. You know, they
plus no one was at the stadium.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I made some jokes about that at the beginning, but people were a late arriving crowd normally. It's the holidays, and it did kind of fill in, and it definitely wasn't anything like, you know, that Lions game where you just felt like you were like at an away game or something. This was a lot more like just being at a Saints game. And like I was saying, there was some booing at the beginning. They for whatever reason chose to introduce the offensive starters, which it just like gives people a shot at Carr right off.
Let them tee
up. And they took it. The offense stalled at the beginning. And so, you know, people were going a little bit with it. But they, you know, that went away pretty quickly, like you said, because really people didn't have anything to complain about other than the score at halftime, which was like, I think like 7-6 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But right. But it didn't look like the Giants were really much of a threat most of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the leading rusher was Tommy DeVito. Because he escaped, like there were two design runs, which were nice. They were good, like misdirection runs. And two of them, you know, classic pocket collapsing and leaving leaving the, you know, fucking Death Star vent open for the quarter. A lot of Star Wars references today. Yeah. I think I'm a little loopy. But, you know, so he was able to scramble free. But I think Saquon Barkley's final numbers were 9 carries for 13 yards.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Damn. And it, you could, before you even have a chance to look at the stats in the first half, it was just like, oh, they are shutting down Barkley today. That's like, I mean, every time the ball snapped, you know where they're running to. DeMario Davis was all over the field. I haven't seen him play like that in a long time.
Yeah, it was
fun. It was really good. It felt, it again, it started to feel real good, even though the Giants were hanging around for a while.
I mean, they were, but they weren't, because it really felt like the Saints were moving the ball pretty well. Like, it didn't seem like very three and out-ish. Even the drives that didn't score, the first half was, you know, 3 punts with a touchdown in the middle. But I don't know how many plays. It was a 3-play drive, a 5-play drive, a 6-play drive. So at least, you know, we picked up 1 first down on a couple of them. And one of them was like a nice long drive, you know, 11 plays moving down the field. Nothing really seemed cheap. It was good. And so even though the Giants got 2 field goals, one of them was from 56 yards. And then the second one was from not their field goal kicker. Yeah. So yeah. It was like, you know, you just felt like they were going to be in a bad situation where they really needed to get very close for them to want to kick a field goal, which actually takes a fair amount of pressure off the defense.
And you can add to that the fact that, you know, the only way the Giants really moved the ball are their scoring drives. I think both of them were the, you know, that Alante Taylor play that gave them a first down. Yeah. And then that roughing the kicker play that could have gone the other way. And I think those are the only things.
Well, I loved the roughing the kicker, by the way. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't roughing. It was just running into, right? Roughing is when you really blow the guy up and you're like, all right, you're supposed to be better at your job than that. And if he's not on a stretcher, you shouldn't have done that, right? If you can actually, like, if you can actually force, like, a linebacker to punt the rest of the day, maybe it's worth it. But if you don't actually take the guy out, you've, like, ruined it for your defense. But he, JT Gray, first of all, Pro Bowl special teams guy, he gets a lot of latitude to do whatever he does. And he came very close to blocking that kick, yeah. Right? He ran through the guy's leg, which is a mistake, and it cost us the first down, and it led to a field goal. So be it, man. He really came very close to getting the second blocked kick in 2 weeks, and that would have been really sweet. And then Alante Taylor, you mentioned it, but that was just a bullshit play. It was a totally clean hit. It was a 3-yard gain on 3rd and 22, and they just gifted the Giants a field goal.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, as far as hitting the kicker is concerned, Greg Williams used to call those remember me hits.
Right, yes.
They take their toll after a while.
Right. Right, though I think he only paid $5 for taking out a kicker.
Oh, that call was such bullshit. I think it's like the fan reaction to like getting excited to it makes the ref want to throw the fucking flag. You know what I mean? It's like because everybody was like, yeah, you know, like it's like if that shit happens on the road, I don't even know if that, like, it's just that that's proof to me that like the refs are not immune to just like the crowd and all that stuff, because you could feel that's why he called that.
Yeah.
Shit.
I was gonna say that was some dark energy there. We thought someone was gonna come throw a helmet or something at some point. Talk about some.
Yeah, and it very much like you watch the replay, and I guess I can understand why he throws the flag in a sense, because though I don't think the spirit of the rule is if the face masks kind of clip each other, that's helmet to helmet, right? It's supposed to be the crown. Mm-hmm. But the face mask probably did clip, and then his shoulder kind of popped the bottom of his mask too, so his head kind of snapped a little. And so I guess you can understand why, you know, maybe you throw the flag, but doesn't one of the other officials have to go? But it was so fucking cool.
Yeah.
There's no way that you can throw a penalty on a play that awesome. He blew him up, man. He got his shoulder in position. I saw it from the other angle, and it wasn't helmet to helmet, whatever. But that just is not. That just isn't how it went.
Yeah. And the way it sounded and the crowd reaction, like, I think it made me think, like, if we had, like, deaf referees, we would probably have a better thing. Because they would just be, because, like, when you lose one of your senses, the other ones are better, right? So you don't, the ref don't need ears, right? I don't think. Right. I don't know. I haven't thought this take through just now.
Right. And so they're super sensitive to the, they're super sensitive to the crowd because they're blind.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Yeah, they could see better if they couldn't hear, and so, they would have realized that that was just textbook hit. That wasn't crowned, you know, like, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but I liked the fact that the defense essentially was set up to say, Tommy DeVito can't throw on us. We're not afraid of their receivers. We're not afraid of his arm. The scariest thing in blue and white is Saquon Barkley, so we are going to make sure that he doesn't do anything. And he did not do anything. He had that one really sweet catch that I can't even complain about because it was actually an incredibly nice throw by DeVito to get it over Warner's shoulder, and a very nice catch by Barkley. And every, you know, you can't get mad at every play. Sometimes you just got to give the offense credit for, you know, making a play. He rolled out. He threw a dime. The guy caught it. So be it, man. If Warner's, like, waving hands were 6 inches in another direction, we'd have gotten a lucky block. But what can you do?
Yep.
Otherwise, like, incredible performance from everyone.
Yeah, it's really not a whole lot to complain about as far as all that's concerned. And it gave everybody an opportunity to clown on DeVito, which was enjoyable to see the defensive.
Yes.
Yeah,
definitely. Definitely. The first time Passignon made the manja hands, I was like, yeah, here we go, baby.
The Superdome PA got into that act a little bit. I can't remember exactly what he was doing, but he's some movie quote or something came where they were showing highlights of the, I guess, 5 or 6 times that DeVito had been sacked to that point. And over the public address, they were saying, and oh, well, that's a God I heard or something like that.
Yeah. That's a spicy meatball.
That was a little over the top, but
it's great, is this though. The end to DeVito mania, you think? I mean, does he have like a Joshua Dobbs arc already? It was like, you know, he was good and then they got some tape on him. Now he's just going to suck. I wonder.
Well, I don't think he was ever particularly good. I think they're winning with defense and he just hadn't turned the ball over much. I don't know. I don't think the New York press is ready to give up on DeVito mania, the feast of Sanja footballs. You know, that's all still rocking. I love that we talked about Davis already, but Brissy was a monster. Finally, he got 2 sacks. I mean, it's hard to say because the left guard, I think it is, Pugh, just is terrible. He was getting bulldozed all game. He was like, you know, their Trevor Penning, who, by the way, Trevor Penning update. Yeah. How many plays did Trevor Penning have in the normal package?
Oh, I didn't even see him. I don't remember seeing him at all.
He played 4 special teams games. He had less time on the field than Mustafa.
Oh my goodness.
whose first name I have forgotten again.
Custifer.
Mustafa had 7 plays in the normal defensive package, nothing on special teams. And so you know, he is forgotten, man. Trevor Penning, they have clearly just given up on because they didn't even have Ramczyk and Trevor Penning didn't get any time. Landon Young played every down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All five of our guys played every down. And then they added Garcia to like jumbo packages 11 times.
And it's like, maybe we don't need him because it doesn't seem like the line played bad.
No, they played well. I thought the line played really well.
Yeah, I think Carl got sacked, what, once? Maybe twice, if I remember right.
Yeah. Something like that. I'll look it up, but I think just...
And one of those was on Carr, I think, because he just held the ball too long one of them times, I believe.
Loves to do that. Mm-hmm. this was Carr's best game, I think, and maybe the game in New England, but this one probably a little bit better. Just when we all saw Juwan Johnson come open, because he was wide open. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the only thing going through his mind is like, oh my God, is Carr going to screw this up? And he didn't. Yeah. And that was right. That was an exciting moment.
Yeah,
it really was. It really was. I loved it. And it's the same goddamn theme we come back to week after week, which is use the middle of the field. When they actually use the middle of the field, when they actually have plays where you are designing for the receivers to do interesting shit rather than just beat their coverage one-on-one, then that's it. You know, like, our guys can run the routes. And like, at a certain point, because I get really frustrated in the kind of game, you know, like a couple of years ago, we're playing Atlanta and we get burned by Olamide Zaccheaus. And I'm like, how come our fucking Olamide Zaccheaus never catches a pass? Yeah. You know, we have him. His name is Keith Kirkwood, right? Like, we have those guys on our roster running routes, and he caught a touchdown pass this week, right? And Jimmy Graham caught another touchdown pass this week. Yeah. And Juwan Johnson over the middle. Like, we, with a depleted offensive core, had enough interesting shit going on with the way they were running routes. Mm-hmm. That we got people open and he was able to throw for real yards.
Yeah. And you know, I'm probably not the first person to point this out, but it has been very gratifying to see Jimmy Graham become the people's champion in the last few weeks. But like the way, when they bring him in the game down on the goal line, it opens up stuff like that. Like, Kirkwood was as open as he was because Jimmy Graham was in the game and the entire stadium was watching him and talking about him.
Yeah.
And so that stuff works. And it has gotten better. Yeah. The offense has looked a lot more dynamic because of all the reasons you just cited.
And it opens up Kamara.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? When you're using the middle of the field, then the linebackers can't cheat in coverage to just spy Kamara and blow up the screens. He caught 5 passes for 9 yards a catch. Shahid had 3 catches, right? And they didn't even use him on the, you know, fly pattern stuff. They were using him as, you know, a more possession mid-level guy, which he's capable of. They were using Bowden. They used Foster Moreau as a dump-off guy, which is fine, right? But they're using their receivers, right? And, they got me again.
They got me again.
I'm excited for the end, and that's not good. And so the crowd was peppy for it? Like, as the game grew, as the game went on, people were just like, fuck yes.
Yeah,
we were having
a good time. Everybody was having a really good time. It sucks that it took, like, you know, 15 weeks or ever to get to this. But, you know, having a game like that at home in the Superdome, you know, with the holidays coming, and everybody was in a good mood. And we know, you know, it starts to feel like that when you know that the season's coming to an end. Like, we've only got one more game at home. And so it's good to get that one in. You know, they tried to do that Jimmy Buffett thing again. And I'm not.
Wait, explain that. What is the Jimmy Buffett?
Okay, so you know, Jimmy Buffett passed this year.
Yes.
Huge Saints fan.
Oh, right. Yeah. I remember this from earlier.
Saints tried to make it like a University of Florida thing where they play like the Tom Petty song at the beginning of the fourth quarter and it gets the crowd.
Right. A Sweet Caroline.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And so they want to play Margaritaville to begin the fourth quarter. And they tried it, you know, I think in the first game, and it didn't take because, you know, as like, okay, we know Jimmy Buffett loved the Saints and Jimmy Buffett loved New Orleans and everything. But like that is, I mean, and I'm not saying anything really bad about Jimmy Buffett or anything like that, but it's very much like tourist facing music.
Yeah.
It's not something right. that like you get a room full or a stadium full of New Orleanians to really like jump on. Right. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't catch. Like people are fine with it, but they don't want to like make it a thing. And they tried to bring right. that back.
What the people want is mouth horns.
We should sneak into the PA booth when we go to the game.
Absolutely. 100%.
All right, everybody. Three. As everyone's like, who is this? What is this? Jew? Like, what's going on?
You know, at the halftime entertainment, this was the Ying Yang Twins.
Oh, who, yeah. Well, oh, they do the song. Yeah.
Right.
Here we come to get you. Yeah.
That particular song. But now in retrospect, I'm thinking if they could have done just a little bit of the mouth horns, just, you know, just for the real head. Perfect.
And that's crazy because isn't the Ying Yang Twins an Atlanta-based group? Like, I'm pretty sure they're from Atlanta. So, like, but they're like a Saint. They're like a New Orleans Superdome. Like, that's the song we used to play when we were good after every touchdown. You remember that? It was, you know, standing up clapping.
So, Ron, they still do that.
Okay.
And this is, you know, this has become kind of embarrassing, frankly. You know, the Saints picked that thing up in, like, 08 or 09, and it was already an old song.
Yep.
Now it is very old song.
We got to retire.
Your team is not playing all that great, and we're like, you know, 6-7 or whatever, and then, oh, we scored a touchdown, and then that song comes on.
Yeah.
We're supposed to feel something. I don't know.
It just reminds you of how we used to be good. You know what I mean? It reminds you of all the other times you stood up and you clapped and you swayed with everybody when we were like, you know, like 11-2 at some point. And it's it's kind of sad. Well, yeah, we need a new jam. But it shouldn't be Margaritaville. But we need something else.
Definitely should.
I wish that the Atlanta game could have ended first so the Superdome could have seen the score update to Carolina 9, Atlanta 7, rather than having that hit when you were in the parking lot or, you know, walking on canal or something.
I think I saw it before we left. I don't know if it happened before the final gun, but it was real close.
Our game was definitely already over.
Okay.
I think I'm like 99% sure that our game was over, and I was posting in the chat about the, you know, Bryce Young legacy drop. You know, and everything about it was just so good. Desmond Ridder throwing an inexplicable, terrible interception.
That guy's great. I love that guy.
And then, you know, literally like a 90-yard drive for the Panthers to be able to call a timeout with 1 second left and kick the game winner from inside the old extra point for the win. I loved it. I loved it. I even liked Green Bay losing because that helped us. You know, because we can, if we take care of Tampa Bay, we take care of Tampa Bay, you know, but if we lose to Tampa Bay, I want Green Bay to have some more losses.
But this is setting up real good. People are so in this season, but it feels good right now. It's all in front of them. They get to play Tampa and they get to play Atlanta. I don't know what else they could ask for.
Right. It's all on us. We have no one to blame. If it goes awry, we are the ones to blame. Not the schedule, not the anything. We have made it to week 15 in a position where if we win...
And I hate to do this. I hate to jinx us and look too far ahead, but like Dallas, you know, looked pretty bad last week, and it looks like Philly's falling apart. So, I mean, and if we win out, I mean, I'm really just worried about San Francisco. Like, I'm taking it too fast at this point.
All right,
too far. Yeah, sorry, all right. I needed y'all to just bring me back. Yeah.
Too far. Too far. Yeah. But it is, like, I do... Like, forgetting about what it means for us, I do, but for the fact that I have, like, so many friends that root for all of these teams. But putting that aside and letting your psychopathic tendencies through, I am very happy to see all of those teams struggling.
Yep.
I want them to feel terrible about themselves. I want them to have given up in body and mind. Yeah.
And that's what football is all about, frankly.
That's right. So I think I do want to sort of wrap this up for time, but I also do want to give like a huge shout out to the secondary for what they are doing in the absence of Lattimore in May. Like you barely know that they aren't there. You know, Adebo, Yadam, Taylor, Howden, Matthew, like they're just playing they're playing so well back there. And I did not expect that to continue. And so I'm just like really excited by
that's
it.
Really rare too, huh, Charles? Like you have that kind of depth in your secondary. Like that's, you always worry about that.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, and Yadam was a cast off. He wasn't expected to even make the roster until he did. Alante Taylor was supposed to, people thought he was going to be a nickel guy this year, I think. And he has ended up getting a lot more time than that. You know, he hits hard. And Adebo was a guy who they used to try to target. And he would get burned, but also get a bunch of interceptions. And then the last couple of weeks, I mean, forget, like, I don't want to overthink it because we played the Panthers and the Giants, but he was just clamps 2 weeks in a row. And so, you know, you can only play the team you're playing. And he played incredibly well these last 2 weeks where he had just an insane amount of responsibility.
Yeah, he's going to see what they're going to put him on, like what Cooper Kupp, you know, coming up, and we'll see what he can do there. I mean, he's playing like a Pro Bowler. He's great.
Yeah. Do we have to play Puka Nacua also on?
Thursday?
I feel like he may have gotten hurt, and not that I want him to be hurt. I think it's a really cool story, superstar fifth round rookie, but not this week. This week, I hope he's a week away.
Yeah.
From being.
When's Lattimore coming back?
He's eligible to come IR now. He and Thomas is also eligible, so I don't know. I mean, it could be at any moment.
If we just get everyone back and healthy for the stretch run and everything comes together. All right, spit on the ground. All right, closing thoughts, because we get to do closing thoughts, because we can't do closing thoughts on the main segment. Closing thoughts for Scoops.
I got one. Yeah. So after all these games in the dome, you know, it's been a long season, like I said earlier, I finally won the scoreboard races game where they get on
congratulations.
I've been picking that white shopping cart to win all year. And it's like, for whatever reasons, I've been losing the rock, paper, scissors, and they finally came through. So I don't think there's nothing stopping us now. It's been great.
You're on a roll.
Yeah. And how are the turbines?
They're hanging in there. You know, number five is back.
All right.
You know, number four is smoking, but you know, we're all hopeful.
All right. Ron,
how are you doing? You know, like I'm thinking about the NFC Championship. That's my job. I'm already there, man. I'm there. That's my thing. No. I need y'all to strap like an electric like shock device on me when I talk like that, or even think like that, and just right, just buzz yeah. me like a dog, like a shock collar, like I'm just some optimistic Labrador. But yeah. What about you, Charles?
No closing thoughts. Yeah. I just hope I can stay awake for a night game with COVID. So that is it. That is the Man in the Dome.
All right.
This is the part of the show that is very dependent on it's the only thing that's truly dependent on the results of the game, which is the segment we call Get Our Ass, which is if the Saints lose, our guest can just get our ass for a couple of minutes. But when the Saints win, we get to get our guest's ass.
Yep, you can definitely get my ass.
Which just becomes less fun when the guest is like, the thing that I care 800th most in life is this football team. And it does sort of also take the steam out of it because you're Irish and not Italian, so you'll just want to do slurs with me. I will keep the getting your ass brief just to say that a Tommy DeVito-led offense is one of the saddest things that I've ever seen. All he can do is run. He's like not a threat to throw. Even with the best safety valve in the country in Saquon, it's like he doesn't know he's there. He doesn't have anyone to throw to. I just, the only other thing I will say to get your ass is your lovely future wife is going to make you watch Red Sox games forever. And I think that's very funny.
That's probably true. yeah, you know, hey, look, I'm going to get my own.
You're going to have a TV in your man cave?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm going to get my own ass, I guess, if it's my ass because of the Giants and all that. The thing with the agent, you know, where it's like, okay, this guy kind of came out of nowhere and he's already got this like cartoon character agent that is like ruining everything. Because I saw today on there's like a big fight about an appearance fee for a like pizza parlor he's going to in Jersey or something. Just like guys, you know, I'm not even Italian and I'm like, you're making us look bad. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Come on. I saw that. I thought it was very funny. Apparently he jacked his appearance fee for this like local pizza place and bakery from 10,000 to 20,000. And it's already funny that they were paying him 10 to show up and make Italian hands.
I mean,
at people for an hour.
Pizza place must be doing well. I mean, that's you know, that's not chump change.
Right. Restaurant, it's not chump change.
Restaurant margins are not great. I mean, I will say I read into this a little bit. We'll see where it goes. You know, I assume it will just stop. But the agent said, well, we never had a deal. So we didn't jack up the price because there was never an agreement on any price. You know, and so actually, you know, so now we're getting into like law school hypos.
Yeah, but that's not how it works in terms of rhetoric. They're not saying it is a contractual issue. They're saying you charged us 10 and then you charged us 10 and then you charged us 10 and then you show up and say it's 20 next time, Tony Soprano. they want to pay him 10 because he's like the local boy who's made good and everyone is like cuisine and cutlets and everyone loves it. And then as soon as he raises his price, because he's like actually marketable now, because he's won a few games, and the first thing they do is go, that little rat fuck doubled his fee on me.
Yep.
Right? Yep. They went from him being the guy they want to the second he has like the slightest bit of leverage, they are like, we are going to cut you down to size, you little shit. You didn't even play well on Sunday. And this is what you're doing with your fee? Fuck you and your mother.
Right. It's very, he committed the cardinal sin in that community, which is thinking you're better than me, which you simply cannot do. That is.
Yep.
That's the one thing, you know, that's it. That's thou shalt not think you're better than me. You know, that's commandment one.
Yeah. Yeah. They, like that. I just love that story. Like it is like a full on crabs in a bucket tale of, of Italian family love.
I mean, cause what is he making right now? You know what I mean? Like
he's making the minimum. He's 100% making the league
right,
minimum.
Which is like, how much is it?
Oh, it's a lot. I mean, it's like, yeah. The league minimum is like $750 or something crazy.
Oh,
like
that's
that.
Okay. I mean, there's,
you know, like he was on the practice. So it's prorated.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
He's going to end up with over half a season at the league minimum plus, you know, half a season at the, you know, peanuts they throw in the cage of whoever they keep on the practice squad.
Sure. You know? Well, like, right. That was my assumption. When I think about the NFL, you know,
the practice squad, I think practice squad is like something in the neighborhood of like 50 grand, something insulting,
right?
Like $50,000 a year just to like get beat up at practice and maybe get elevated. But your game check is a prorated amount of the minimum.
Okay. I mean, it's good that they have a high minimum. I just kind of assumed that they just kept, you know, that like everything in the NFL, the union just has had no juice and could not get anything done for people. But I mean, that's good.
They're not as worried about rookie salaries as they are about doing things to suppress money in free agency.
Right. Okay. Well, good for him. So, yeah, I mean, he could be like, fine. I'm not getting out of bed for less than to go stand at a pizza place for less than 20 grand. You know, I guess he's in a position to say that.
Yeah. I would love for his agent to say, and I think they use jarred sauce.
Right. And it's in like suburban Jersey, right? It's not even in like, you know, a city, I don't think.
Yeah, but I mean, so is East Rutherford.
That's true.
And so is probably, like, I mean, I think he grew up a suburban kid himself. You know,
Morristown. Like, Morristown.
Oh, is it
baby.
Morristown? He's not from the mean streets of Newark or Camden. So, but yeah, he just, that story did crack me up. I just loved it.
The agent wearing like what looks like the like Party City like pimp outfit like level suits. Like, it's just so good.
Yeah. He's like at the end of a rainbow. Next week, he should come back with the same suit, except kind of Matthew Lesko style.
Sure.
But instead of the question marks, just have it be like the green clovers and orange stars. And
yeah.
And then he doesn't even need to show ID at security at the Meadowlands.
I assume not. Yeah. Wait, who are you? It's like, what? I mean,
come on. You think they make two of these?
I mean, the first outfit was like the pinstripe. It looked like it was truly like a little kid's like Spirit Halloween, like gangster costume. Right.
Oh, yeah. Like he was in like one of the Dick Tracy villains.
Right.
And then he comes back the next week wearing like a green screen.
He's a smart agent. You know, he knows how to get attention. That's certainly, you know, people know who he is. And he's probably got a few clients. I bet he'll probably end up with a few more. Yeah. So, you know, credit where credit's due on that.
So let's actually, let's talk about this game a little. I know that you were in and out and so did not really get to watch as much of this game as you would have liked had they won it. But about as much
that's about
as
right.
you liked, given the actual result.
Yeah, yeah. Like if I had been like, I got to watch this game, you know, to prepare for the podcast. Like, and I turned it on, and it, you know, and it's like, oh, I'm not. Okay, I know how this is gonna go. Oh, this is gonna be. I get it. You know, it doesn't seem like the most exciting game.
I've seen enough. I can do this like the LA Story weather report.
We got it.
Just slap a few clouds on the board and we're good. Did you get to watch like the highlight package and shit and see?
Yeah, I mean, I saw kind of
the general flow.
I watched a few sacks. It's not what, you know, I watched some you know, I got the flavor of it, and the score tells enough of a story, you know, that it was not exactly a barn burner.
No, it was not a barn burner. If all you watched was the highlights,
right,
it would seem like there was a continuity error because the Giants scored 6 points on 2 field goals And to give you an idea of how the game went, they had different people kicking each field goal.
Right, yeah.
Because Randy Bullock kicked a 56-yard field goal and then pulled a hamstring on the kickoff. And so their punter had to kick the second field goal. Just as an aside, I gotta actually look up Randy Bullock's dimensions. Because he's an absolute unit. He is 34 years old. He is 5'9", 210. That's blocky.
Yeah, that's like me. I mean, I'm sure, proportioned very differently than, but still, nonetheless.
He is not proportioned very differently.
he's got that golden leg, though, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like my favorite story from sports is Jack Germond, former pervert of the Baltimore Sun, was interviewing John Kruk, who is like the perfect everyman baseball player who looks like he just got kicked out of a bar.
I mean, his book title was I'm Not an Athlete, I'm a Ball Player or something like that.
That sounds right. He is talking to Jack Germond, and Jack Germond makes a comment about him being out of shape or his weight, and Kruk's like, look at you. What do you weigh, like 250? And Germond is like, I'm 65 years old. When I was your age, I weighed like 170. And Kruk goes, oh, yeah, what'd you hit?
Got his ass.
Yep. Fuck you, buddy. there's a reason why I do my job and you write about my job.
Yeah, I'm sure that really makes you, I'm sure you love every day thinking about what could have been. Yeah, exactly. That's like the last thing you want to hear.
Though that isn't even the best John Kruk. The best John Kruk story is his last at bat was a single, which got his career average back up to 300. And he took off his helmet, waved to the crowd, and retired.
Got it done.
But the reason I bring up Randy Bullock's size is because the Saints kicker, Blake Groupie, is like 5'9", 150.
Right. Well, that's the prototype, right? That's like the Vinatieri like type,
Well, no, but I mean, he's small even by like Vinatieri. He looks like a Ukrainian gymnast.
Oh, Vinatieri's 6 feet. Wow. I guess because he's standing around with a bunch of football players. Never mind.
Yeah. Like the size of all these people. I think about one of the pictures that I think about all the time was a photo of Bruce Smith from the Bills at some charity event with Patrick Ewing. Mm-hmm. And Bruce Smith looks like the little brother in a Big Brothers program. The only thing that Tommy DeVito really did particularly well is that he did run for 40 yards, almost 40 yards on 4 carries, because whenever the Saints didn't sack him, he actually did get away, and he ran a couple of nice options, but the rest of it was a nightmare. Barkley got 14 yards on 9 carries.
That's the kind of football I like to see, you know, just grinding it out, really boring. That's right. Plays that last 1 second, and then there's 45, like a minute and a half of the stuff in between plays.
But at least the clock is
running. And the clock is running. That's true. That's a fair point. the thing that always like drives me crazy, and this is like not in any way a novel observation, but like I always think it's the funniest thing when they have the chains out, you know, and everyone's living or dying on whether there's the ball is just far enough, and it's like, The spot is totally nonsense to start with. Like, it's completely insane. Like, they have all this, they send all this time.
It is my favorite thing about football, that they have this chain, which looks a little janky, but they treat it like it was manufactured at like a forge in Switzerland, even though it's just being roughed up and carried around by a couple of people.
Right, right.
Working for $45 a game. They have this thing with theoretical Swiss accuracy that is then placed by a part-time guy who sells insurance 6 days a week, who was standing 50 feet away from where the play is.
Yeah, it was there. Sorry.
And then he goes and he puts his foot down with certainty. And he's like, this is where the ball was. And that's the same thing with punts that go out of bounds, is like the guy running up the sideline to mark the ball like the Mountaineer on The Price is Right.
right. Yeah.
You know, right who's there. Like doing... Right, who's doing like trigonometry in his head to figure out where the ball crossed the line while he was standing by the pylon. So it's like all of this fake science. And then they have like, you know, 40 cameras shooting it. But there's always like some lineman who's got his thumb on the lens.
Right.
And so you can never see where the ball is anyway.
And it, I mean, I think it's great. I think there's something very, very human about the whole, like, the creation of these insane things that are, like, designed to be argued about as, like, the best way to solve this problem. Because, like, so many of these, you can, like, see these things develop, you know, like, these ad hoc rules as, like, things come up, right, with these sports. Because, like, they just started, you know, somebody was like, oh, what do we do in this situation? Okay, let's do this or whatever. And like the idea of like making a football move and all that kind of, it's just like, it's like how many angels like on the head of a pin type stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, well, he was kind of, you know, and then it's like designed for one half of the people watching to be like, this is fucking horse shit. And you know,
during the game, you know, it's like one of the rare games where I actually got to hear the broadcast, because usually I'm in a bar where some other game is the feature game that gets the audio, but now I'm just at home watching. And so it's Kevin Burkhart and Jonathan Vilma, who, you know, all pro for the Saints and Jets. And Vilma, as they're doing some reviews, and, you know, Vilma's like, ah, when I played, that's a touchdown because blah, 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 blah,
right.
blah. And Burkhart is like, yeah, I mean, that's true, but at the same time, we have 800 cameras and everyone at home knows that the call was wrong. So they kind of have to change the call because the only people who don't know for sure are the ones on the field. And Vilma's like, true enough. But also, like, it was probably in a way better when it was a mystery and you just sort of lived with the imperfection.
Right. It was better when you couldn't tell.
Yeah. But I mean, in a way, it's true because you didn't have all the delays and, you know, shit sucks sometimes. That's the rest of the world.
Right.
But it is true when everyone does know what the truth is, because you've seen it from 800 angles. You also, it's, you know, it's kind of incumbent on the game to not completely get it wrong. Like, there are enough things that are unreviewable that they can't change anyway by rule. Like, when they whistle a guy down and they're like, ah, well, sorry.
I mean, yeah, you do create a situation where it's like, well, why can't we get it right? You know what I mean? Why can't we get every play right? It's like, because it would be watching. Yep. It would be torture. It's like, well, this is important, though.
Hey, folks, it's about to be a little discontinuous because Patty and I kind of went on a bit about baseball and I just wanted to cut it out. So that's why I say we talk too much about baseball. You don't have to hear it. Also, I did a little research after the episode and practice squad players actually make about 12 grand a week. So that's not chump change. Still, it's not NFL Tommy DeVito money. All right, back to the show. All right, that's a lot of baseball talk for a football podcast.
This is all I have.
So I will just say this was definitely a fun game for me to watch because it's been a weird season. We had a very weak schedule and we needed this win to get back to 500. So, you know, it's one of those situations where if you can't identify the fish at the poker table in the first 5 minutes, you're the fish.
Yep.
The Saints apparently were the fish. They thought that they were the team with the weak schedule, and everyone else is like, ooh, the Saints. And so we beat the Panthers last week, and then we beat you guys, and so now we're back at 500, and because we are in a joke of a division, we're actually tied for first. And it's not even a three-way tie anymore, because Atlanta managed to blow a game against the Panthers.
There you go.
Who are now 2-11.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They're really bad. But I just want to mention this because it's nice to be mean to Falcons fans. Uh-huh. They were up 7-6 in field goal range, like inside the 20. And Desmond Ridder threw a completely inexplicable interception, like running near the out of bounds line. He threw across his body and hit a Panthers defensive back in the chest like he was trying to pass to him.
Sure.
And the Panthers used the last like 6 minutes of the game to drive down to the one and kick the game-winning field goal.
The Falcons have fallen.
The Falcons have fallen.
That's the sports-themed Gerard Butler sequel.
So that's it. It was just nice to have like a nice, comfortable win.
Yeah. Look, I'm happy that you're happy. You know, like I said, it means more to you than to me. So I can't pretend that I'm, you know, I can't get all gassed up as much as I would like to. You know,
I mean, it is nice that I don't have to like take joy in your pain, though I would have.
Yeah, you certainly can. There's just not much pain. Yeah. You're not going to get too much juice out of it.
Exactly. Yeah. I like that. So so what's coming up? When is the next live show?
Great question. Sometime in the new year. Nothing planned. So we're just... Okay. You know,
okay, so you don't have like a standing date?
No.
Oh, okay.
We should probably, but we don't. We should try to do more. I think we're trying to do a little bit more in the new year, but for now we are just, you know, doing the same old thing. So yeah, check it out.
Okay, so it is What a Time to Be Alive. Is there a bespoke website?
There is whatatimepod.com. We'll have all the links to all the stuff, including the Patreon and all that jazz. But yeah, you know, we're slowly joining the promoting things with video sort of side of things. So we're putting stuff on Instagram and stuff. So, you know, we're getting there, but no, it's a fun show. We've been doing it for a long time. You know, we enjoy it. Other people seem to, so check it out.
All right. I will definitely do that. no, I'm kidding.
Sounds interesting.
Sounds interesting. No, it is great. Shout out to Kath Barbadoro and Eli Uden, the co-hosts of the podcast, and Shelby, the master producer, who is also just, for a guy who I've like literally never heard speak, has a really fucking funny Twitter sensibility.
Oh yeah, he's classic.
Indeed, classic Shelb. Thank you, Pat. Somewhere in the middle, there will have been a Man in the Dome segment, so I'm glad Ron was able to join us, and thank you to Skooks, and thank you to
Dan Parshall from Candy Necklace,
who will be doing the audio engineering, and we will just close with the horn, the happy horns after a victory, and who dat. Boop, 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 boop.